6 weeks to go through, 6-7 weeks, first several chapters. And it's a series we're calling Forward, Claiming the Promises of God, because that's what we see Joshua doing with the Hebrew people. They are moving forward into the promised land. We're encountering all kinds of challenges, all kinds of issues, but they're still moving forward. And today, we're talking about an unlikely hero. Unlikely Heroes, actually, is the title of my sermon today. Because heroes are usually unlikely, which is why they become the hero. In fact, most of the movies that we see where the hero is the hero of the story, it's a person who's an unlikely hero. It's the person you would least expect, the person who's not really a good candidate to be the hero of the story. Just think about some of our superhero films. I'm going to show you some of these things. Clark Kent. We know Clark Kent is an alien who is a big-time nerd, but Earth's atmosphere like awakens his superhero potential, right? Isn't that the baseline of the Superman saga? Clark Kent is just an average, everyday guy who's an unlikely candidate to be a hero. And I picked the Christopher Reeves version because that's mine. That was mine. Okay, that was my childhood. Okay, so some of you is like, this is way too old to see that guy up there to be Clark Kent Superman, but that was my Superman. All right, so here's another one. Peter Parker, who's the skinny nerd who gets bit by a spider, right? Essentially, that's the whole thing. Is that both Tobey Maguire? Is that okay? All right, so I got that one right. And there's been so many Spider-Men that it's hard to know which one's which. So just like nobody expects Peter Parker to be Spider-Man, he's unlikely to be a hero on here. Here's another one, Bruce Banner, the nerdy scientist who is involved in an accident, and then he becomes the Incredible Hulk, right? You know these stories, yes? Like, I need a little more feedback from you. Yes, you understand that I'm setting this up here, the unlikely hero, Bruce Banner. Okay, here's another one, Tony Stark. Now, he's probably the most likely of all of them as your hero, right? He's the best one, even though he has no skills to bring to the table except money. Like, that's the only thing he has. So probably the most likely of all the candidates to actually be a hero. And he becomes Iron Man. Here's another one, Bruce Wayne, similar but different, childhood trust fund, sees his parents get murdered, all kinds of childhood trauma here. He processes it through becoming Batman. Some go to therapy, some become Batman. Here's another one, Steve Rogers, afflicted with polio as a child. So he grows up kind of skinny, you've all seen this stuff, you know what I'm talking about, and then he becomes Captain America and saves the day in World War II and beyond. All of these superheroes start out as weenies, all right? Let's be honest, okay? They all start out as something that they don't become, you know, like they should not become the superhero because they are the least likely candidate to become a superhero. That motif, that trope, that scenario is common throughout literature, right? The least likely candidate becoming the hero. In fact, we see it over and over and over in the Bible. The Bible itself is full of the least likely candidate becoming the hero of the story. In fact, Jesus himself. Think about it. Born to an unwed mother who was poor, had no money whatsoever in a backwater town. Homeless. The guy was homeless for the entire part of his worldly ministry. He was the least likely candidate to be the literal savior of the world. And so you could say that all of the superhero motifs are based on Jesus himself, one who is unlikely ends up becoming the hero for all by giving up himself. He gave up himself so that all could be rescued and all could be saved. So that's today's idea, is the unlikely hero, and our unlikely hero today, her name is Rahab. Now, trigger warning, all right? Rahab worked in the sex industry, all right? So we're going to get real about some of that stuff. I'm going to give some background information before we get into it. So if you're triggered by that, I just want to be honest with you, that's happening. Or if you have children in the room, get earmuffs, whatever you need to do to feel comfortable about that. So set the scene a little bit. Here the Israelites are. They're camped out on the east side of the Jordan River. Do I have a map of this? Is this where the map comes in? Yeah. So here they are on the east side of the Jordan River. That's this blue line coming up here. Let's see if I can get my shadow up that way. They're camped out over here. They've come up this east side, and they're going to go across the river to get into Jericho. All right? They're trying to go. You've probably heard the song, Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. That's this, okay? Not yet. In 2 weeks, we'll talk about that. But right now, they're spying out on Jericho. They're sending a recon mission because they know they're going to have to take over Jericho. Now, so Joshua sends out two spies. And this is interesting because Joshua gets his start as a spy. In fact, Joshua and Caleb were the only two out of 12 spies to go into the promised land and come back with a good report. There was 10 others who came back with a negative report. So he sends out two spies to overlook the land, especially Jericho. Now, Jericho was the biggest, nearest fortified city. Like this was, if you get Jericho, you get all of it around there. Everything falls if you can go get Jericho. It's the entire region falls under Jericho. So the spies go out, and apparently they're not very good at their job because they get spotted right away. People see them. And to the extent that the king hears about it, like, hey, there's these spies going in. Not only that, the king hears about it and where they had gone to Rahab's house. Did I mention what Rahab does for a living? I did. Okay. Odd, isn't it? Odd that they went to Rahab's house. So why did these men of God's nation go to a prostitute's house first thing? Do I need to answer the question? No, okay. There's no indication of anything that negative or improper that goes on in the story. But I think part of that reason is because they could go in and out of Rahab's house largely undetected because there's men going in and out of Rahab's house all the time. This is not unusual for unusual people to be going in and out of Rahab's house. Her house was also situated on the wall of the city. So there was access for them to escape out a window if they needed to. That proved to be true. And it's possible, I think, that they thought they could buy her silence since she could be bought with for other things as well. So they targeted Rahab as a possible person to sneak their way into the city. They're humans. Maybe they were seeking their service, but there's her service, but there was no indication of that whatsoever in the Bible. I think we should say a word about Rahab because this is not a good position for her to be in, but she's likely in this position because something terrible has happened in her life. Later on, we find out that she requests that her family, her father, there's a whole family listed. None of it includes a husband. And likely, she either was unable to have a husband for various reasons or her husband had died, leaving her in a position where she had no one to help her to take care of herself, so she resorted to the one thing she could do. Now, I'm not condoning the behavior, but I'm explaining the likely reason why she was in the position she was in. So word gets out that Rahab has two spies in her house, and it works its way all the way up to the king, and the king sends a message like this. This is Joshua chapter 2, verse 4. Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, yes, the men came to me, but I didn't know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. I don't know which way they went. So go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan, And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. So she lies. She lies. Like, yeah, these men came in, but I sent them away. I didn't know who they were. I didn't know what was going on. They already left. In fact, if you hurry, you can go catch up with them. And so they send some, I don't know, some troops out to go follow them and find them. Meanwhile, she was hiding them on the roof of her house, under the flax, under the things that she had there to keep her house warm and dry. So she sends them on this wild goose chase, and then she goes back to the spies on the roof, and she tells the spies, verse 9, I know that the Lord has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on all of us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt. That was like 40 years ago. It still lives on. And what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. For just a second, place yourself in Rahab's shoes and in the people of Jericho's shoes. The people who are occupying the promised land that the Hebrew people are coming in to possess. Let's just think about that, because we usually only think about the promised land from the standpoint of the Hebrew people. Like, yeah, they came in and they got what was promised to them. But there were people who lived in homes and had jobs and had lives and had children and had grandchildren. There were people occupying that land who didn't really want to give it up. And now there's a million people on the other side of the Jordan River, and we heard what God did for them. We heard what they did to some other kings. Oh my gosh, we're next. Can you imagine the fear that they would have? Think of the fear that they would be in the hearts of the people as another people group moved into their land and dominated them and destroyed them and pushed them out. Hear what I just said? Because sometimes we only think about America from the perspective of white people who are claiming their manifest destiny. Just stop and think about that promised land that we live in, and there were people who were occupying this before we arrived. And the fear that they must have had from these whites that were coming in to destroy them, because someone always gets displaced. Someone always gets displaced. Think of the fear that must have been in the hearts of the people who were already there occupying the land. It would have been terrible. Even if they recognized that a miraculous work that God was doing through the nation Israel, they knew that they could not compete with that. And so Rahab is in a position of fear. Now, she's already in a position where she's working this job just to be in survival mode, right? And now she knows her and her entire community are likely to be destroyed. And so this informs the rest of the conversation. She wants to leverage her position. She's got these two spies on the hook, right? She could actually give them up anytime. She could just turn them right over and at least kill two Hebrews, right? So she leverages her position. She knows she's going to get wiped out anyway. She saves in one swoop here, she saves the two spies' lives, and her family gets saved. There's an inevitable battle brewing, and she knows she's going to be on the losing end of it. So she makes this agreement. Here's verse 12. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. I've saved your life. Now please save mine. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and my sisters, and all who belong to them, that you will save us from death. See, there's no husband and my children in this picture. They're not there. She's got her whole other family she's concerned about. And the men assured her, verse 14, our lives for your lives. If you don't tell what we're doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So they're like, that's a good deal. We'll take that. We'll take that deal. I like that. Just don't tell anybody what we're up to, and we'll treat you well when we come back. Verse 15, so she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. And she said to them, go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return and then go on your way. So she doesn't send them in the direction of the river, which is where the pursuers were going, to go in the opposite direction and wait for a while, let it cool down a little bit, then you can go back home. I think that's good instructions. Now, let me just add one little thing here. If you were paying attention last week, we said that the Israelites were given 3 days to prepare to cross the Jordan River. Now, these guys, then the next story, chronologically in terms of Joshua, the next story is this one, where they've been gone for a day and told to hide for 3 days, and then they come back. So there's some chronological issues here. I just want to highlight that if you were paying attention. Probably this story happens before chapter 1. They just included it in chapter 2 because it doesn't fit in chapter 1. All right, does that? All right, it's for whoever's paying attention to those things. Then what happens here, the author winds it back a little bit and adds some more detail to their conversation that happened in the room before they let out the window. Verse 17, now the men had said to her, they add a little detail here, this oath you made to us swear, this oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land, you have tied this scarlet cord to the window through which you let us down. And unless you have brought your father, mother, brothers, and all your family into your house, bring them all into your house, tie the scarlet cord out your window. If any of them go outside your house into the street, their blood will be on their own hands. We will not be responsible. As for those who are in the house with you, their blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you made us swear. Agreed, she replied. Let it be as you say. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord to the window. She did that right away. So her instructions were to gather the whole family around in one room, put this red cord out your window, a scarlet cord. It's red, scarlet, and gray. You already know scarlet and gray. So scarlet is the red. It's red. So she does exactly what is told her to do. Now, she doesn't bring the whole family yet because it's not time yet, but she puts that in there. Now, here's the thing. These instructions are the exact instructions that the Hebrew people were given all the way back in Egypt on the last plague, the plague of death, the night of what we now know as Passover. They were to bring their entire families into their homes and then paint their door frames over their doors blood red, the blood of the sheep that was, or the lamb that was slaughtered to feed them through the night. These guys are just giving them the same instructions that they already understand. This is how you are protected. Bring your whole family in together. Trust in the blood of the lamb. Bring your whole family together. Trust in the blood of the lamb. Bring your whole family together and trust in the blood of the lamb. And she did it. She put her entire faith into a red cord, into the representation of blood. She put her entire family on the line on that this is what God was calling her to do to save herself and her entire family. Now, I want to finish out the chapter. I'm going to come back. We'll talk about some points about it. So let's just finish it. When they left, the two spies went to the hills. They stayed there for 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. Of course, they couldn't find them. Then the two men started back, and they went down out of the hills. They forded the river and came to Joshua, son of Nun, and told him everything that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, the Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. These two spies came back with a good report. Hey, we got this. This is going to work out for us. And the reality is, as they were moving forward, this episode, this recon mission, did nothing for their military strategy. All right? They didn't need to change a thing. We're gonna dominate this thing. They didn't have to change their plan, but they now knew that the people were melting in fear before them, right? They knew that God had given it to them before they even needed to fight. They went out to check it out, like, oh, we already got this. We don't actually need to even fight for this. They had to take steps. So I think the recon mission of the spies did two things. It gave them courage. It gave them courage. The last time they had spied on this, they were discouraged, and they wandered around the wilderness for 40 years. This time, they had courage. And I think it does another thing. It shows that God uses unlikely heroes. I think that's the other point or the other takeaway. Another takeaway. God uses unlikely heroes. Rahab is the least likely candidate to save an entire nation. Isn't she? I mean, she doesn't belong in this world, right? Like, with the fate of nations in her hands. This is not a place for a prostitute to be making those kinds of decisions normally. When you think of God's holy people, you don't first think about sex workers. Do you? No. Yet, Rahab is featured prominently as the hero of the story who saved not only two spies, but also encouraged an entire nation that through God's help, they could actually win the battle. And that's not where Rahab's story ends. We'll see her again in Joshua chapter 6, I think, when Joshua actually fights the battle of Jericho. Spoiler alert, Rahab's family is saved. It works out. All right, I'll just give it to you now. Even that is not the end of Rahab's story. We find out later that after the battle is done, after the Israelites occupy the territory, Rahab settles down with a Hebrew man named Salmon, or Salmon, S-A-L-M-O-N. Salmon and Rahab together have a son named Boaz. Boaz's a name you should maybe be familiar with. Boaz is the one who's the kinsman redeemer and ultimately husband of Ruth. Ruth is a prominent character. We did a whole series on her a year ago. There's an entire book of the Bible. It's short. It's four chapters. But Ruth is a prominent feature in the Bible too. So Rahab's daughter-in-law is Ruth, okay? The Ruth from the Bible. Spoiler alert, again, Boaz and Ruth have a son named Obed. Obed has a son named Jesse. Jesse had a son named David. King David. King David. Rahab is the great-great-grandmother of King David. And yet, her entire identity is the fact that she was a prostitute at one point in her life. Isn't that a shame? That's what we hang on to. Not that she's the great-great-grandmother of King David, but that she was a prostitute. But I want to go one step further because we find Rahab's name again in Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1, we see the entire lineage of Jesus himself, who comes from the house and the line of David. 14 generations after David, we find Jesus. Rahab, the former prostitute, is listed prominently in Matthew chapter 1. She has her place and leaves her mark as a grandmother of Jesus himself. Rahab is unlikely because of her job, but she is a hero because of what God redeemed in her life. The thing that could have brought her the most shame was the way that God brought salvation to her, her family, an entire nation, indeed, the entire world. You see, Joshua sent spies in and they saved a harlot. Yeshua, Jesus, was sent to be with the harlots. Joshua saved a prostitute and her family. Yeshua, King Jesus, came to save a planet and all who walked on it. Joshua was bringing a nation to establish a kingdom in the land of Canaan. Yeshua, King Jesus, establishes a heavenly kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. Joshua redeemed one. Yeshua redeems all. even you. Even you. You are an unlikely hero for somebody. We're all just average people. We don't have special skills. You don't have superhero strength or speed or agility. You probably don't have all the cool gadgets and toys like Batman does and Iron Man. You probably don't have all the money and all the brains in the world. And those things, those facts, make you even more unlikely to be a hero. But you can be a hero for someone. Just think, for just a second, if Rahab had given up on those two spies, if she had turned them in, what if she had turned them in? Yeah, I got the two guys. They're up on the roof right now. Go get them. They're there. Find out what they're doing here. I didn't know. What if she had done that? Well, I guarantee you we wouldn't be talking about this right now. Like, this would not be a sermon for sure. Her impact went beyond her decision with those two. She made a decision for two people, and really for herself, because she was in self-preservation mode. She's like, let me leverage this for myself and my family. At least I have a shot at being alive. But that decision to help these two had a ripple effect that remains to today. I promise you, she wasn't thinking about that when she made that decision that day. She wasn't thinking, well, maybe through me, the whole world will be saved one day. I guarantee you she wasn't thinking that. She was thinking, how do I stay alive for one more day and maybe help these two spies out? That's it. You don't have to change the world to be a hero. Rahab wasn't thinking about being a world changer when those spies walked into her door. She was probably just trying to stay alive for another day. Sometimes that's all you can do. Try to exist and stay alive for another day. Sometimes that's what life is. Maybe I just stay alive for today and make it to tomorrow. That's what I'm going to do today. Most of the time, it's that, and now, how can I help this one person that's standing in front of me at the moment? How can I just help this guy? How can I help this woman that's standing in front of me right now? What can I do to change the trajectory of their day? And here's another thing. You don't have to change the world to be a hero, and you don't have to have a great past to be a hero today. Don't let your past stop you from changing your future, your family's future, and maybe somebody else's future, and maybe even the future of a nation. People around you may not see you as a hero today because of things that you have done in your past, but they don't see you as a hero until you become one. I guarantee you, those two spies walked in her door, they saw her as a prostitute. But when they lowered out of the window, they saw her as a hero. She went from zero to hero like that, right? They did not see her as a hero when they walked in, but they sure did when they walked out. Just because you did things that people look down upon now doesn't mean that you can't change your life and change others' lives. Here's another thing. You don't have to be special to be a hero. Rahab had no special tools. She had a rope. That's all she had. She had a rope, and she had some leverage, to be honest with you. She had no crazy skills or no special knowledge. What she did have was trust in what God was doing in the moment. Yeah, I'll tie up the rope. I'll tie up the scarlet cord. I'm just going to trust that this is what it's going to be. She put her faith and trust in the representation of the blood of Jesus. And that's all you need to do. Trust in Yeshua. Trust in Jesus. Trust in Jesus that as you help out normal, everyday, ordinary people by doing normal, ordinary, everyday things, that Jesus will guide you and be with you throughout. Look, you might be in survival mode right now, just trying to make it to another day. And honestly, I get that. I understand that. Rahab was definitely in survival mode. She might have done anything to save her family at that point, but also in the process, she looked up and she saw there were two men that needed her help in the moment. Even when you're in survival mode, maybe just look up, look around. What does this person who's right in front of me need that I can help them today? Because we may not be able to change the world, but we can change the world for the people right in front of us. And then you become their unlikely hero. Let's pray. God, as you work through Rahab, the most unlikely candidate to have had this experience, we ask, Lord, that you would work through us as well. We ask, Lord, that we would recognize where you are moving and where you're working and where we can intersect with what you're doing so that we can have a trust, a faith, a growth for ourselves so that other people in front of us can experience grace and mercy so that we can see you moving all the time throughout our families, our communities, wherever we find ourselves. Lord, work through us. Be with us. Help us to trust in you. Help us to just see the representation of the blood of the Lamb and be saved by the blood of the Lamb. Lord, as we close out this service, perhaps there's somebody here who's barely hanging on, who's just in survival mode, and they can't see past the things that are going on in their life right now. But I ask, Lord, that you help them to look up and see you, to look up and see somebody else, that they can make a difference in somebody's life, that they need to be here to be an unlikely hero for somebody else. Lord, be with us as we go through all those things and all those thoughts and all those emotions. May you represent to us and present to us how we can encounter people in the way you would have us to encounter them. We pray this in Jesus' name.